Time to do Vikings Territory Breakdown Podcast. Welcome, everybody. Hello and welcome to this new and improved and much closer camera of Vikings Territory Breakdown. Yes, that's, if you think that's scary, wait till you hear what we got to say today. No, I'm just kidding. The Vikings, first of all, let me introduce myself. I'm Joe Oberle, and you just saw a way too close picture of me. I'm with VikingsTerritory.com and PurplePTSC.com, and I cohort is Mark Craig, who's a longtime NFL insider and writer, is the with Star Tribune and StarTribune.com, and we're here to break down the latest on the Vikings, who came out of their winter hibernating and came out and chatted last couple days over at TCO Performance Center. Mark, you were out there, and how was it? Were they all giddy because there's no games played yet and everything's hopeful and we can sell hope and it's all good. It's all great. It's all wonderful because they don't have
right.
up yet. They aren't practicing.
They're undefeated in press conferences.
There it is.
Quasey won his, O'Connell won his, Kirk, I don't know if he won his, Kirk tied his, Kirk went 1-1 in his.
Shocking. He's kind of a 500 guy, isn't he?
I won't give further comment on that. But no, it's a lot of and I'm not saying they're being sincere. I'm just saying that, you know, this is the time of year where you hear all the things we're hearing, the culture change, and now with it being more of a modern type of cliche, going from the fear-driven monster that Zimmer was to the friendly kumbaya, hold your hand, much younger, offensive genius guy. So we'll see. I mean, it's a lot of talk. I'm not saying that it's not heading that way, but before we start saying that they got all the answers, I want to see a few games here.
It's going to be like that for a while. Zimmer's just going to keep getting incrementally trashed, not trashed, but tweaked or whatever you want to call it, until that they line up for that first game and the final gun sounds and we find out how Kevin O'Connell and the crew will do. They're just gonna, it's what you do, out with the old and in with the new, I guess. And it's kind of sad, but I'm sure there's some truth to it.
Yeah, I mean, every coach that's left and every coach that's come in, it's the same thing. Leslie Frazier could not have been more well liked in that locker room. Are more well liked by just humans, and they, what a great guy. On his way out, everybody lined up, hey, we want Leslie to stay as a coach. And then when he gets fired and then Zimmer comes in, it was the 180 to, hey, we need more accountability. We need more drive, more. It was all the things that opposite of what's being said now was being said back then about, you need a leader. You need a firm hand. You need this. You need that. And not that they were bad mouthing. Certainly weren't bad mouthing Leslie, the person. In this case, I feel like it's Zimmer. It's the personality. It's the style. It's the age. It's a veiled thing that, and that's because it ended ugly. I mean, it was never going to end pretty with Mike Zimmer. It was never going to end with like when Mike Tice got fired, he came over and held a press conference and laughed and joked and slapped everyone on the back. And when Leslie got fired, we all went out to dinner with Mike. It was, he left and I don't believe he addressed the team. And so it was, that's just kind of his personality. And then I think the players, it was time for a change. I mean, Mike did some really good things, but it's time for a change. So now we got that off season of the culture change and hearing all that stuff. And when you've been through that rodeo so many times, it gets a little tiresome to hear it. Especially it's podium speak now. It's everything is presented for the cameras for instant, to be written instantly all over the country by everyone. I'm not bad mouthing it entirely, but I'd want to see some results before we say, hey, this guy's got all the answers.
Can't sell hope any more than you can right now. So I suppose you got to sell it. But, here's maybe a hopeful thought. Kirk Cousins spoke yesterday and he told the assembly that he wants to retire as a Viking. And my only question is, oh, so he's retiring after next season, huh? I don't know. It just comes off as a little bit strange. I mean, he's obviously feeling good right now. Maybe he feel like he's just been let up from a dark place that he's been in for the last 4 or 5 years with Zimmer. But, you know, usually when someone says that, that engenders love and appreciation from a fan base. But I don't think that's the case here. There's a lot of people that were, you know, making snarky remarks like I just did. So
the thing is, you know, Kirk was asked about, you know, what were your thoughts about, you know, because all the quarterback movements, all the trades and movements of quarterbacks, you could have been a part of that. And then why did you sign the extension? And he's like, you know, it was he wanted to retire a Viking, wanted to stay a Viking. There's nothing wrong with saying that. And they also, he would say, you know, he's looking for win-wins, you know, to help the salary cap. Now, you know, some people could say Kirk Cousins at $45 million on the cap was unbearable. 31's not where he should be against the cap, in my opinion, a lot of people's opinion. But I think Kirk had enough awareness of when he said that, he followed it up with the exact quote here is, it's why he added, you know, I would like to play my way into retiring as a Viking. I've got to earn the right. And so I give him credit for, you know, Kirk knows he's a 500, bottom line 500 quarterback on the nose, 51, 51 and two. He knows that. He knows that he's not gotten the wins that equal his contract. I'm sure that you know, when you add that, he's going beyond the stats. He's going by. He's got to get results. He knows that if he has another great season or a great statistical season or a good statistical season, and if they muddle around their 8 and 9 again, they're back where they were, where they are now. And he's got that no trade clause. So to me, it's like, yeah, if Kirk Cousins, if they make the playoffs and they go to the NFC Championship game or they get to the Super Bowl, then yeah, Kirk Cousins does another contract. And I think everyone will be happy with that. But if he doesn't, I think he needs to waive that no trade clause. They need to get what they can get out of him and they need to move on, because you're right back where you were this year. And if they're 8 and 9 or they have a disappointing season, it's not going to be the kumbaya selling of hope. It's going to be, hey, here were the results, and they were no different than the guy that they badmouthed all this offseason. So it's a big year for him. If he produces and they get to the Super Bowl, he very well will retire as a Viking. And if they don't and it's a disappointing season, I say that he probably ends up waiving that no trade clause and picks a place, and they move him to someone who's maybe closer to winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah, stuff changes every year. As soon as we have the results from the last year, that everybody, every new season also brings a new perspective and a new comment on how they want to handle it. Right now, Kirk is feeling good, and if they do get to the Super Bowl, there'll be a bloody statue of him out front. Don't you think about that twice. You know, you mentioned the salary or his salary cap hit. We saw this morning that Derek Carr got a new contract, 3 years for like $121 million. He's going to be like, what's that, $40 million against the cap or something like that. So suddenly Kirk's number drops to eighth in the quarterback derby. So it's not now should be perceived as bad as it was. You know, I personally – you know, you said he's a 500 quarterback, but I'll still take him over Derek Carr myself. So any thoughts on that, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, Derek Carr would like to be a 500 quarterback. He's probably well below that in terms of wins and losses. I don't know that he's I haven't seen the details of the contract. I don't know. I doubt that he's counting. I think he counts 19 million against the cap this year. Yeah. It's an extension. The average, I guess, would be 40. But I don't know how much of that's guaranteed or anything like that. But yeah, I put, you know, Derek Carr certainly isn't in the upper echelon of quarterbacks. Neither is Kirk Cousins, in my opinion, as far as I don't think he's a top five quarterback. So I don't know where Kirk's, you say eighth, whatever. That sounds
that's
pretty
what I, good. That's what I saw. Yeah.
That sounds pretty good if I'm Kirk's agent. And I mean, Kirk could write a book about how he has managed the business side of the job. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer when it comes to taking a gamble on himself and his durability and his potential, and taking that through year 10, or he's up, I think he's 33 now or whatever it is. He's done well for himself. And he's, like I say, when I talk, I feel like he's not a bad quarterback. He's a good quarterback who has maximized his earning potential beyond his what he's produced.
There's only one guy I can think of that's done it better than him, and his name's Jared Kushner, but we won't go into that right now.
Yeah.
He's done quite well recently. Yeah, Kirk is it's going to rise and fall with him this year. Everything is sunny, everything is happy, and just a little bit too much. You go back and look, and if the results are there this year, you know, it's only going to hurt Zimmer a little bit more in his legacy as far as how he's perceived. But I don't know. We have to wait until it all happens, you know.
But I don't know that I don't necessarily agree that it rises and falls with Kirk. It rises and falls with the team that's around Kirk. And that's the difference between, you know, the Aaron Rodgers and the Kirk Cousins. And you know, people say it's ridiculous to compare the two, but whenever you're paying them like that and they're similar against the cap, then you should compare them. He rises and falls with how everyone around him plays. Whereas, you know, the ones that are in that upper tier, the supreme upper tier, they lift people, they lead people, they cover up mistakes, they cover up injuries, they cover up maybe some bad defensive play. As far as Zimmer, it could be a knock against Zimmer if they play well. Well, I don't know. I don't think I agree with that either, because if Danielle Hunter stays healthy all year, if Za'Darius Smith comes back to health and they have those two guys on the edge, and then say they draft a corner number 12 and that guy is one of these can't-miss outstanding players right away as opposed to Cam Dantzler, you start saying, hey, you know, at least – I look at the context around it, at least. I don't know how many people do, but you say, hey, Zimmer could have done this with this type of defense. I mean, Zimmer, a lot of injuries, a lot of problems with, you know, financial problems on that defense, getting rid of some guys in 2020. So, you know, to me, there's some context to all of that stuff.
I agree with that, but, you know, and I'm not saying it's legit to the better the Vikings do this year, the worse Zimmer looks, but I think that's the way it will be perceived. People might not, if the Vikings come out and they go great guns, they will have improved the defense. There's no two ways about it. And you can either slag Zimmer for that or slag Rick Spielman for, you know, signing Kirk and leaving the defense bereft for a couple of years. But
yeah, and as durable as Kirk is, that's his strongest strength. You know, Green Bay last year, Zimmer's head is on the chopping block. Kirk Cousins is sitting at home watching it on TV because of COVID. So, and that's, you know, if they beat the Packers, you know, they would have swept the Packers and maybe get in the playoffs. Zimmer very well could still be here. Had Kirk Cousins been able to play in that game and given him more of a chance than Sean Mannion. So yeah, there's a lot on the plate when it comes to Kirk Cousins and the role that his presence played in the fact that we have an entire new regime right now.
Well, thank God he's happy. I guess that's what matters. Speaking of the defense, jump to the other side, we'll get Patrick Peterson talk. He returned. We talked about that last week, and I, for one, am happy about that. But it was interesting. One of the quotes that came out of his presser was that he wants more targets. And I have to ask the question, what's he going to do? Just play possum and slack off until they, you know, to try to sucker some throws in. I mean, if you have a reputation like his and you cover your man well and you do your job and where you're supposed to be, any smart quarterback in their side is not going to throw it in there because he knows who Patrick Peterson is. He's older. He's not the same player as he used to be, but he showed last year that he still got something in the tank. So interesting statement. I wondered what your thoughts were on that.
My thoughts are that the reason he'll get more targets if it's not Breland and Cam Dantzler on the other side.
Yeah.
I used to laugh, you know, like you look, whenever you're sitting in the press box, you look down, you would instantly, your eye would go to Bashaud Breland's neon shoes. And I'm like, perhaps one of the worst corners in the league at that time playing, and you're wearing a target that if a quarterback's under pressure and he sees those shoes, he probably just throws toward the shoes. You know, that's the reason he didn't get many targets, is because he was their most competent, even at his age.
Yeah.
His prime for sure. He was there, you know, there's no reason to throw at him. So like, he might get targets if, say, they bring in this young right. guy from LSU and say he's a Pro Bowl player, caliber player right away. They may, you know, the older gentleman might get his wish.
Yeah,
I do like his, you know, as we talked about last week. I like him re-signing because he is a pro. You know, you're going to get the best out. He's going to be taking care of himself. He's going to be a fantastic person around the younger players, and he's still got a little bit left in the tank, and he came back for half of what he made last year. So it was all the way around that's a win. Even if they end up stocking themselves with one or two corners in the draft, there's a spot on this team for him still.
I'd love to see Derek Stingley come in here and play. I mean, he was running a 4.3 4.47 40s at the combine. He's just what this team needs. But I think his stock is rising. He's not gonna make it down to 12. You think there's a possibility that someone like that drops to the Vikings, or they might even try to move up for him? I wouldn't think that this.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, things are here now. You know, it's always, you know, there's no way this person will be here. There's no way a quarterback will go. You know, where, I mean, every year, when it's a weak draft class for the quarterbacks, there's not going to be a top 10 quarterback, and they'll end up being that's when the Mitch Trubisky's, you know, with 12 starts in college, end up going number two overall, or you're going to see this Liberty quarterback probably go top six. I mean, you know, what people are saying, where people should go or shouldn't go, probably not based on what the actual reality is. It's based on whoever the Mel Kuypers of the world. You know, hats off to Mel. He started this whole thing. Sometimes
they ever go back at a guy like him afterwards after the draft and say, okay, let's see. You know, they grade all the people's drafts, but did they go grade the mock drafts, you know, and say.
Someone probably does. I hope, you know, I don't want to know my batting average. It's worse than when I played Little League Baseball, and I was not good in Little League Baseball. So, to me, it's like it starts with whoever, like, you know, establishes the mock drafts, and then, you know, people just feed off of the same mock drafts, I think, and it just ends up being, you know, there becomes a narrative that I don't know that teams share, you know, whenever they're putting together their mock drafts, and that's why it's always, oh, this seems like this is a reach. Well, let's find out in 3 or 4 years whether it's a reach. I mean, Patrick Mahomes at one time was considered a reach, and why do they take a quarterback? Alex Smith had a good year, and, you know, well, what are they thinking? You know, well, they got one of the best quarterbacks that'll probably ever play this game.
If you do enough mock drafts, you're eventually going to be right. If you do enough big boards in your war room, suddenly it's going to be just who you were going for, and you'd have the board to prove it. But anyway, that's beside the point. I'm going to stop it there, and we'll come back with talking about some more people talk yesterday and the day before, and we'll touch on those and hit a few more subjects for the Vikings. So come on back to VikingsTerritory.com breakdown. Okay, welcome back to Vikings Territory Breakdown. I think that's the name of this podcast. It slips my mind from time to time. But, you know, I'm older, so what can I say? One more quick thing about Patrick Peterson, back with Mark Craig here. Peterson talked about the collaborative feel he's sensing on defense with Ed Donatell and the whole crew coming in, the new regime, which certainly isn't Mike Zimmer's defense. You know, we can keep talking about Mike until the season comes, and then we have to start talking about these new guys. But, Mark, what are your thoughts on that? Those are just words that Patrick Peterson is saying at a presser, like you kind of alluded to earlier, or is there something to that? Is there a new feel around there that everybody's going to be collaborative? Everybody's a part of the process to get this team on the field and ready to go on Sundays.
Well, yeah, that's certainly what the coaching – I mean, it's been sold from – from the searches, yeah. But before the searches, it was sold when Kwesi came in. It was sold when O'Connell came in. I know where O'Connell comes from. McVay's a younger guy. It's that's what's being sold. That's the feeling that guys are, you know, certainly to a man have repeated. So that's what it is. Now, I'm not saying that's not what it, you know, it probably is that. But how does that equate, you know, to me, it's a big leap from that to that's going to be change everything. You know, I don't know. And Patrick Peterson, it's interesting. He had a connection with Donatel back in 2011 when, you know, Peterson was one of the hot shot top five, top 10 prospects. His last workout was done in San Francisco. Donatel was defensive backs coach. So he worked out Peterson. And if you've been around Donatel a little bit, you can tell that he's, as Peterson said, he's a people person. He's high energy. He's 65, but he looks and sounds like he's probably in his early 50s. I mean, he's
like me.
Yeah, he's a young Joe Oberle at 65. So, but yeah, they had a connection and throughout the years, and they were in the same division for a while. Because Peterson went number 5 overall. The 49ers had the 7th pick, and they took a linebacker. So they had a connection over the years. They would talk, you know, like probably like you do when you're coming on and off the field and stuff. So he always liked Donatel, he said. And so then they had always kind of talked about that. Maybe we'll end up together someday, sometime soon. So that played a role in Peterson said in him coming back. Mm. And then into all the how things have changed. And where I say take some of this with a grain of salt is because, you know, Peterson, he's all on board with the, you know, the vibe that's going on right now, and that's good. That's it's his right. But this is also a guy that last year said he came here to be part of Mike Zimmer. Mike Zimmer's the guy who gets the most out of these older defensive backs. And so I just think sometimes guys say, not that they don't mean it, but in the moment they say the things that like last year, Mike Zimmer's the reason he came here. Now, you know, it's a year later and all the things that are being said, it's Mike Zimmer's the Antichrist, and he's the hit. Mike Zimmer and his system are on some scrap heap next to the, you know, horse and buggy somewhere. So it's, you know, I'm not saying they just say whatever fits today. That's kind of, things change in this league very rapidly.
You know, and Mark, not every, you know, speaking about a new different feel, collaborative feel, not every player is the same. Not every player is going to maybe excel in that kind of thing where you're asking more of him to contribute, to collaborate, to whatever. Some players really enjoy, you know, for lack of a better term, the top-down methods of Zimmer. Tell me what I'm supposed to do. Tell me where I'm supposed to be. Tell me what you want, and I'll go do it. As opposed to have me tell you what I want to do and how I think this offense or defense should work. I mean, not everybody's the same. So, you know, this all sounds good right now, but it might not work out for everybody in that regard.
Well, you know, even the new guy, that Chris Reed, the guard from down by Mankato Brewery there, 2354, we mentioned it.
You mentioned it. Thank you, brother.
Yeah. He said, I played with old school guys. I played with new school guys, because he's been in Jacksonville and Indianapolis and wherever. And he said, you know, the vibe now feels like it's a, what did he say? It's, this is a staff that creates the environment of players taking over and growing compared to a fear driven system. So here's a guy that wasn't even around when, you know, Eric Kendricks unleashed the fear-based system, quote, right after Zimmer was fired.
He's doing his homework.
So, yeah, so maybe he's, you know, well, it's, he went to Mankato, and he's, his family's, said his father-in-law is a big Vikings fan, so maybe they've been talking to him, you know, about this fear-driven, you know, this house of horrors that was last year, and everyone was very frightened last year, apparently, and, but you know, it's a different style. To me, it's exciting because it is so different. It is 100. I mean, everything that they've done is 180 degrees different, other than keep a lot of, most of the same players. everything that they're selling, that they're preaching, even going a little overboard to be nicer in press conferences and to care about lowly schlubs like us.
Wait till Jim Suhan gets a piece of them. That'll add.
Yeah. So now I don't think anything's going to rattle these guys. These guys are in that new age. I don't think they'll be. Zimmer could be entertaining, I thought, especially when you get a little angry. I thought
absolutely
he got too cranky and sleep deprived and bitter at the end. But I thought that, over the years, Zimmer could be entertaining in his crankiness. He just got way too cranky and sleep deprived at the end, and it too bitter at the end to even for anybody to look at that and say that's entertaining. It was more like that's sad. How Mike, you need to, I know the end's, I know that you know the end is coming, but maybe handle it a little better.
Well, speaking of the collaborative feel and the new age defense that Ed Donatell is going to, 65-year-old Ed Donatell is going to present to the Vikings. How about on offense? I know you did a story this morning that talked about some of that. Adam Thielen spoke yesterday, and he talked about an offense being more feel offense, meaning, just not the same, as the way you put it, meaningless, rigid, and requiring post-snap reads. It gives the players more an opportunity to sense and feel what's going on out there, rather than the rigid, here's your pattern, go run it, whether they know it or not, and be there where you're supposed to be, and they'll throw it to you. I think you have some comments on this, Mark, because is this the kind of offense that Kirk Cousins is going to flourish or faint in?
Well, I asked Thielen that, and he said, started off saying, I can't speak to that because I'm a receiver, because one thing I do know is that Kirk Cousins is comfortable with this staff, and Kirk Cousins loves this offense. One of the best ways this offense was described, I'm not saying it's going to be the same as the Rams because they have different personnel, but that's where this guy's coming from. So you got to look at what the Rams did and how they described this collaborative feel was, I think it might have been during the Super Bowl interviews, and it might have been O'Connell himself, or it was McVay, or maybe Wes Phillips, or one of these guys, basically saying, we present what the framework of what we're trying to get accomplished here. But they don't do it to the point where they tell the players like every single step they need to take. They sort of where they share with the players. It's not the players saying we want to do this, this, and this. Here's the play. Here's what we're thinking. Here's what we're trying to get out of it. And then it's and Matthew Stafford and saying we're going to take it and go. If there's little nuances that need to be done or post snap reads, that there's some freedom to do that. And I don't believe that certainly based on what Thielen was saying, was not a lot of that last year with being able to kind of read and like receiver and Kirk make adjustments based on what they're seeing.
I can't believe that.
Well, that to me is going to take up. I mean, that Kirk, as we all know, is kind of he's a processing machine. Sometimes he plays like a machine. I think his arm can make all the throws, but sometimes you think that Kirk maybe his brain gets in the way. I think when you're watching it, and I wonder how he. I mean, they're obviously going to work a lot on this, so there's a lot of practice time that has to be done, and a lot of feel that. What the good news is, he's got two of the best receivers in the league and to work with, and there's a chemistry there now that where they can make these adjustments to this new style of offense. So, and he's got a head coach that is gonna feel more comfortable with. One thing about Kirk when he was asked about, he was asked one of his first questions was, what do you think about Zimmer and Spielman getting fired? And it was just a total shrug of the shoulders of saying, hey, been in this league for 10 years and that's just the nature of the business, blah, blah, blah.
Ooh.
And he said, a little subtle. And this, I think Mike Rand wrote about it today. He was like, Kirk's become one of us because there's a little, or one of you, I suppose, but I've been here 20 some years now, but you were born here. Yeah. bit of passive aggressiveness. He said he said all of that stuff, shrugged his shoulders, and then said, you know, it's just like me with having, or just like us having five coordinators in the past 5 years or whatever it was. So it was kind of a little zing of you know, hey, you know, I had, you put me through all these changes and then you lost your job. So
a little shade by the, by numbers.
Yeah. So very, 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 veiled, passive aggressive. So
well, then he is one of us for crying out.
Yeah. So Mike Rand said, you know, if he, whether he retires or not, he's officially become, you know, one of us.
Well, 26 years, you are too. So like it or lump it, you still winter here. So you're one of us. What can I
say? Yeah.
What you described, boggles my mind. Isn't that the modern NFL where you've got a receiver and a quarterback that are either so connected or know their job so well that they can freelance to, for lack of better terms, that they can adjust when they go out on a pattern, they don't just turn around and stand there. And if they're covered, they get the ball. And if they're, or they don't get the ball. And if they're not, they get the ball. They've got to move. They've got to, you know, find an open seam, you know, hell, you know, that's football, right? I mean, you can't, if they weren't allowed to do that last year, what a waste for two of the best receivers that are ever going to come through and wear purple. My goodness.
Probably some of that when there's pressure, you know, there's, you know, obviously the, you know, routes break, or protection breaks down and routes change and then they kind of go fly. You know, Kirk's never been a guy that's, you know, every year we kind of talk about, you know, there's at some point in training camp, it'll be a, you know, can Kirk Cousins go off script, you know, and you talk about Kirk Cousins going off script, and Kirk Cousins just is not an off script guy. Kirk Cousins is never going to, and a lot of people are never going to do this, but he's never going to, you know, scramble and do a no look pass or throw with his left hand like Patrick Mahomes.
Well, so, no, but
there's a little more. There's obviously more structure, and Thielen also said that he believes that, you know, based in this offense, that Cousins going to have more opportunities to change the call at the line of scrimmage, have more options. I don't think he had much of that freedom.
No, I'd agree with that
at all. So it'll be interesting to see, because it's I'm not saying he can't do it, but when I think field quarterbacks, or, you know, I don't think Kirk Cousins as a field quarterback or as a, you know, off script guy. I think more of Kirk Cousins as he's got the arm to do all these throws, given the protection. He hits his spot, the receiver hits his spot, the ball gets completed, they move on. But we'll see. I think the exciting part is that there is an offensive staff now that he's going to be comfortable with. There's no longer going to be this, old grumpy defensive guy in his way. So now you got your guy, and let's see if it works. That's what makes this exciting. It could work. It could be 8-9. Who knows?
Yeah. Even in sandlot football, as a receiver, if I'm covered, I'm sliding, or I'm coming back to the quarterback, or I'm, you know, all of a sudden busting deep or something, doing something, but to just, you know, to not have any of that flexibility just boggles my mind. But, you know what, I guess if there was any question I'd love to get the answer to, would be what went on? What was the discussion in post-game film studies the next day with this team when interceptions were thrown? Where what was the discussion like between quarterback and head coach? You know, was it really true? Yeah, you got to take those chances, Kirk. Or was it, what the hell are you throwing that ball for, Kirk? You know, because
I think it's, and not that Zimmer wanted interceptions, that Jay Gruden wanted interceptions. I think they just wanted him to trust trust Justin Jefferson more, trust Thielen more. And he would have spurts where he did that. He also had spurts where he just looked like he was afraid to throw an interception. Yeah. And that's the consistency of you got the potential to do this. You have spurts where you do this. And then all you have like gaps where it's like you get to an end of a game and this is your moment. And you've done it before, and not tremendous amount of times, but you've won games.
Yeah.
And then you'll get to an end of a game here and there more than you should, and say where it's okay, this is what we're paying him for, and you just don't get it. It's like he's not doing. And the people that love him say it's, well, the protection broke down, or the if Zimmer's defense had stopped him before that, blah, blah, blah. No, it's like in that moment, I don't care what happened before.
Right.
Moment is what, that's where he was supposed to step up on third and six or whatever. And it you're like, oh, that's it. That's all they got. But then there were times where he could do it. So
right.
It's getting that out of him consistently and winning 12 games and getting in the playoffs and being a contender is, you know, what they should be doing.
Yeah, which they should expect from him. I mean, the difference between him and a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers is when he takes that chance and throws that pick. The sense with him is he knows he's going to get another crack and he's going to go out there and rectify it. Where I think what last year or the years you'd see if Kirk did something like that, took a chance and threw the interception, made the bad play, they're done. It's over, you know. And that I don't know what you attribute that to. Some of that's a quarterback's mentality, but some of that's you know, the team he's got around him. But there's always mitigating factors. But the situation here is now, Kirk, you're getting paid. You've got your offense is even better, going to be better supposedly on paper than it was last year, and your defensive better. You're going to have a coordinator. You're going to have a new head coach that you like. That's going to support you rather than shake you on the sidelines when you say you like that to him. Hopefully, I mean, you got an offense that you love. So we found out. It's on you, buddy. It's time for you to make the next step to the next level in your abilities and you know, get above 500 and win some games. I mean, it really is. I think, you know, you can throw the shade at, you know, five offensive coordinators. It's legitimate. It's legitimate. But boy, if you're going to say that, you better be ready going forward to prove that that's what held you back, you know, if you're going to make that statement.
Yeah, and one of those offensive coordinators got a head coaching job and became coach of the year a year later. So,
who did he play for, or who did he? Yeah. Who was he coach of?
Yeah. So to me, it's, you know, it's. I know they fired DeFilippo. They fired DeFilippo because DeFilippo thought he was the head coach, and
right.
And he should never have been hired anyway. So that was never going to work. You know, Kubiak. Kubiak had 1 year of COVID and said, the heck with this, I'm going back to the ranch. That had nothing to do with it. I mean, that was the one guy, you know, of all the assistant coaches that Zimmer ever had, other than his son and Andre Patterson, Gary Kubiak was the closest guy to Zimmer. So that wasn't a rift. And then they hired, you know, was not a smart move to hire Gary's son thinking, well, he's going to be the same as Gary. That should have been, that job should have gone to someone more experienced.
Yeah. All I'm saying, it just comes down to you, Kirk, more than you may want to know him. You know, I'm not, you know, I hope he cares, you know, and I think he does. I mean, I think he's certainly a decent guy, and he's certainly an average quarterback win wise. He's got some tools. He's, you know, it's there for him. This has got to be the year that you leave Vikings fans saying, okay, we took a step and we can take another step next year. If not, I don't know what's going to happen. But
yeah,
go ahead.
He care. I mean, it sounds like T.O. I care, man. I care. No, I don't think there's any question he cares. I mean, he, even with the guaranteed money that he's gotten,
that takes a little care out of it, you know.
I never saw a guy who didn't care. I know. I didn't see that at all. I just saw a guy that's got limitations on how quickly he processes things whenever everything's not perfect.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. You know, speaking of, not guaranteed money, but Justin Jefferson talked yesterday and talked a little bit about his someone asked him, I don't know who it was, maybe it was you, that asked him what it was like to see all these other receivers around the league get these big contracts. And I thought he handled it cool. it's hard to ignore the fact that he may be having a payday coming down his track, but But you know, what are the Vikings, the cap strap Vikings supposed to do with that? I mean, if he's going to start talking about seeing some kind of wide receiver money of this year, I don't know if the Vikings are the place that's going to be able to afford him to do that.
Well, but by that time, you know, maybe they're with a guy with a rookie contract, a quarterback with a rookie contract. You know, he's got two more years on his rookie contract. Yeah. And I think guys typically get signed, you know, to an extension before they, you know, he's a first round pick. So they would have like a fifth year option on him, but he'll be getting his second contract before that fifth year option kicks in. So, you know, that's 2 years down the road. I asked him just, you know, point blank. It's like, cause you know that he's thinking about that. And, whatever he's making now is a drop in the bucket to what these guys are making and what he'll be making. And it's like, how do you have the patience to play 34 more games and without wanting your money? And he's like,
you bastard.
He said, it's part of the process. I mean, it was all podium speak. It was all public for public consumption speak. I'm not saying that he feels differently behind the scenes, but I'm sure there's some impatience behind the scene. He was just talking about what it's like in the process. You got to run your own. You have to follow your own path. But he did say, you know, I was excited to see these guys, you know, Tyreek Hill getting averaging $30 million a year. Devontae Adams averaging $28 million a year. I mean, we're seeing stuff for receivers that we didn't see for quarterbacks 5 years ago. It's only going to get more. It's only going to keep going up and up and up. So Justin Jefferson, I would think if his career trajectory continues and moves up, and now he's got an offensive quarterback, and say this guy does, you know, turns him into a machine like Cooper Kupp, where the stats are through the roof, this guy will be the highest paid receiver if he keeps going. It's just a matter of time. He's got to stay healthy. They have to have some success. They have to, you know, Kirk has to, you know, come through for him. You throw Stephon Diggs in there. I was amazed by that contract and the fact that Diggs signed it. He signed an extension with 2 years left on his contract. I don't think Kirk Cousins would do that, because Kirk Cousins would be saying, hey, what would be my worth in 2 years? And I think that Diggs, before that contract even kicks in, could potentially have – the pout meter could be really high, because it may – he got like 4 years, $120 million or something, whatever it was, but he got $72 million guaranteed. It's outrageous numbers now, but in 2 years he might not be among the highest paid. Who knows? You know, where this stuff goes. You might see a time where like Justin Jefferson gets paid and Stephon Diggs is in Buffalo. The irony of this would be, hey, grumbling about his situation in Buffalo. Look what Justin Jefferson got. So that's, but by that time, you know, this guy will be worth it. That's what the market will be. That's where the game will have grown financially. And that's just how it goes.
You know, I'm going to say something that'll probably get me in trouble, but because it's not well thought out yet, and I'm just going to spew it out here.
Should I start crafting your apology now?
You should.
Go overly apologizes.
Set up a website for me. Tyreek Hill played for the Kansas City Chiefs. That's gone to 3 Super Bowls in recent times. The Diggs was the Minneapolis Miracle Man, but he's on Buffalo Bill, who are going to be in the, you know, people are talking about them to be in the Super Bowl next year. Devontae Adams has been on the Packers, which is, you know, been in the mix in the NFC Championship for the last so many years. You know, Justin Jefferson's great, but has he elevated this team more so than it would have been with KJ Osborne, but, you know, as with Adam Thielen taking the lead role? I mean, I think Justin Jefferson's great. I don't see yet that he's this multi-mega million-dollar man like these other contracts are signing. I just don't see it, and everybody just is expecting it. And I know you could look at his number; he's done well. He hasn't caught every ball that's coming his way. He hasn't, you know, scored every touchdown like Davante Adams does in Green Bay or did. It just, to me, he's really good, and there's no doubt. Jamar Chase might even be better, you know, but he's been elevated really quickly in my mind to where he is just going to break the bank in 2 years. Now, you put another season together next year, and in your last year of contract, you have another great one. Okay, fine. I'm all good for it.
Oh, yeah, he's got to do that.
But right now, all the talk with this dude is like he is the – next Randy Moss, and I'm sorry, I don't see it yet. I saw Randy play, and Justin, you're not Randy Moss yet. Sorry, another.
But nobody's Randy Moss.
Yes,
nobody. Right. Nobody was ever Randy Moss before Randy Moss, and nobody will ever be Randy after Randy.
So you know what? You know, I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it. I just say it's premature, and I think we need to slow the roll on all the mega millions for Justin. You know, prove it to me another year. I mean, this is going to be his third year coming up, right?
Well, yeah, he's got to get
his team done the past 2 years. You should hold him to the same. If you're paid that money, you should hold him to the same thing you're holding.
Yeah, I don't
do.
That's just no one does that. You do that with quarterbacks. I mean, you don't do that with receivers.
If there's one that's going to be paid this much money of your salary cap. I think you should. It's kind of unfair to Kirk that all of that gets laid at his feet because he's got to throw to somebody, you know. And
yeah, well, you could just chase yourself around and chase your tail on this one because Davante Adams wasn't. I mean, Davante Adams is, I think, probably the best receiver in the league, best route runner. But Davante Adams didn't break out until Jordy Nelson left the Packers, and Davante Nelson played with Aaron Rodgers. You don't think that I know Adam Thielen is one of us, one of you. I know he's from Mankato. I've heard he played D2 football, went to Mankato. But do you think if they'd have blown this up and, Adam Thielen ends up over in Green Bay, you don't think part of him might have been energized by playing with Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah.
Tyreek Hill is unique. In ways that different ways than Randy, but I mean, there aren't too many Tyreek Hills, like a different position, but like a Darren Sproles, you know, that crazy quickness. But he played with Patrick Mahomes, you know. To me, I still think that the quarterback is. I'm not saying the quarterback makes all the receivers, but to me, it's more on the quarterback than it is on the receiver. When I look at Justin Jefferson, I look at his skills. I don't even know what his numbers were last year, but I know he set the rookie record for yards. His numbers are fantastic, but when you just watch him play, he is. I had him as an all pro, when I voted for all pro, he was one of my three all pro receivers. I think he's one of the three best receivers in the league. And but in order to get that kind of money, He's only 22 years old, so he's got to complete that process. And if he does it and he stays where he's at, now if he gets hurt or falls off, I don't see this guy going backwards.
Yeah.
If he keeps going forward, he's going to be in line for that kind of money. And the beauty of the cap, the way that they do the cap, there's always a way to work it.
Yeah.
Do something. And you're going to have, by the time he gets to that point, you're going to have some older players that are coming off the books and not going to be around. I mean, I don't see, I love Harrison Smith. I love some of these older guys, but in 2-3 years, they're not going to be playing. They're probably not going to be playing at high levels of, at high salaries. And if they don't win, hey, Kirk Cousins is not going to be here, or there's not going to be a quarterback taking up $35, $40 million of your cap. Plus the cap's going to keep going up again. So if there's not another pandemic, the cap keeps going up and everyone gets paid and they figure out how to work it out. And we watch the games.
Well, all right. I'll have to go. We'll have to take a break here so I can reconsider the heresy I've just spoken and asked.
So
our producer,
Joe, the headline, Joe Oberle thinks Justin Jefferson is no good, right?
Yeah, go with that.
Terrible.
I'll just talk to Mike behind the scenes to have, make sure that he pulls this whole segment out of it and just shoot cans it, whatever. We'll be back with more from Vikings Territory Breakdown. Come on back. All right, welcome back to Vikings Territory Breakdown with Mark Craig from the Star Tribune. Mark, did I say Mike Craig? I meant Mark Craig.
I go by either.
Okay, that's good. Well, talk into your Mark when you do that, Mike, will you? Okay. Mark, you talked to Dalvin Cook yesterday, and I didn't hear him say this, but apparently he predicted a Super Bowl win at some point. Can you talk to me about that? Tell me what happened there.
I don't know if I was Googling something, and I saw a TMZ interview. It's a typical TMZ caught him somewhere out of a game room or somewhere and said, with you and Justin Jefferson, you're going to win the Super Bowl? And he said, yeah, we're going to win one. We're going to win one. Definitely. And I just asked him, I said, hey, and amazingly, the old guy in the room was the only one that had seen this TMZ thing. Some of the other younger guys. If I've seen TMZ, they must be getting ready. Sort of like when I discovered Twitter or when I discover something, usually that's kind of when the next big thing happens. And I'm like, why can't we be back over here doing this one? And I said, is that just, what guys have to say or what they want to say, or do you see something in this team? And he's like, what was it? He said KOC basically went on saying how O'Connell came in, looked at the roster. He praised all the additions that they have, really likes the Za'Darius Smith signing. And said that, they feel that they have the talent to win a Super Bowl. So, yeah, he's predicted a Super Bowl, but it's not earth-shattering stuff because they all should believe that they can win it. And they do have the talent. There's question marks all over the map from one that people aren't really factoring in is the learning curve for a new head coach that's 36 years old, whatever. He's not going to be perfect. Donatell hasn't called defenses, I think, since with the Packers, long stretches of being a defensive back coach and then being a defensive coordinator and Vic Fangio. Vic was calling defenses. So, can he still do it? Obviously there will always be a question mark on Kirk Cousins until he can get that, the record up. So, yeah, he Dalvin Cook has predicted a Super Bowl. He didn't say this year, so that he was smart to say not to say this year, so he doesn't get every Wednesday or whatever when he talks, gets reminded, hey, you're going to win a Super Bowl. That becomes uncomfortable when you're 0-5 and people are asking you about your Super Bowl prediction. But there's talent on this team. Do they have enough depth? Can they stay healthy? So, yeah, he predicted a Super Bowl, but you're going to have to wait. It's open-ended. It could be any number of years from
now. What did he say when you brought it up? Did he give you the glare?
No, he's just saying that, just explain why he feels that way. I thought it was interesting that he said, mentioned the new head coach right away, but he also said he liked to be coached hard. So I don't know, that was earlier, that was maybe a reference to how Zimmer coached or how Zimmer's coaching staff coached him.
When you're asked that question, you're not going to say no either.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, do you think you're asking a guy, are you the best cornerback in the league? Are you the best receiver in the league? It's clickbait stuff, but
yeah, I'm standing in my room by myself. I'm the best cornerback in the league.
Right. So, yeah, but to me, it was like, just kind of to frame it and like, hey, is that what everybody always says? Or sometimes you're asking questions not for the answer, but the reaction. What's going to be the reaction? Can you see a guy kind of, sometimes it's hard to translate that when you're writing because you cannot read their minds. But if you ask someone about, hey, what do you think of this? And they're going, you kind of get a feel for where they really are.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Especially in front of a podium. In front of a podium, these guys have all been trained to say perfect things at the perfect time and not to stray from the script and stuff. You're having fewer and fewer players that are comfortable enough in front of the podium to actually speak their mind. And I think one thing at the end of last year, and I Justin Jefferson started doing it at the end of last year, I believe, over some things that was impressive. It was like, wow, he feels strongly because he's doing it on a podium with the cameras rolling.
Yeah. I think there's only one recourse. Next week, you got to go in there and say, hey, I heard you predicted a Super Bowl. And last week right here, you doubled down, Dalvin. So what are you going to say now? You know, anyway. That's just the kind of journalist we love. Dalvin also came out a little news. He said he's going to change his number to number 4. And I just like, to me, when I first saw it, I said, oh, well, yeah, good for him. But I saw this tweet online where somebody said, yeah, you can change his number to 4, but we all know who number 4 belongs to. And they said, Favre. And I said, I'm sorry, the man played here 2 years, had one great, great season, one really lame season. And he had all these other seasons across the border, 16 for a different jersey. So settle down with 4 being Favre's number,
certainly not here, I wouldn't think. But
no. So, go ahead.
That's the number I think of, number 4. It'll always be Brett Favre.
Well, yes, but, that's still – that's
not here, though. We're
supposed to have a parade and retire the damn thing now, with Favre. No, it was great. It was wonderful. And Favre's going to do what's ever politically expedient. He's going to go back and celebrate in Green Bay when they want to do something for – We should have a jersey retirement or, bring out Fran Tarkenton and all those great Vikings quarterbacks with him, where he had Bart Starr and him, blah, blah, blah. And Rodgers, we'll have Fran Tarkenton and Favre. Huh?
Yeah. Okay. That'd be good.
That's freaking silly. I love that season. I got nothing against Favre. I love that he came here. I love that what it did to the Packer fans. And I love all that. But it's like, settle down as this is his number and it's nobody else. But it brings up a point where you had talked to me about the relevance of numbers to players. I know you wanted to talk. You want to set this up a little bit, what you're talking about there and what numbers.
We used to, like friends, it's one of those, I guess, end of the bars discussions where you're like, you just start with number 1 and you go up to 99. And it's like, what's the first? And of course it's different for people of different ages. And it's just like any number, like in any sport, what's the first number? What's the first name that comes to mind when you throw a number out there? Like for me, like 32 is obvious. Jim Brown. For me, Jim Brown retired the year I was born, so I never saw him play.
O.J. Simpson, what are you talking about?
Yeah, so someone else would say O.J. Simpson. To me, it's just Jim Brown, even though I didn't watch the guy actually play a game. I was on a podcast with someone one time, and they were asking me about this young guy. And he's like, so what was it like watching Otto Graham play? And Otto Graham freaking retired in 1957. And so I said, I don't know. I said, I was born 8 years after. And I said, I actually didn't see Jim Brown play, let alone Otto Graham. So,
to exemplify your point, you said that there's numbers that should associate with players and whether or not they do. And we could throw out numbers in any sport and try to see if
or just one. Overall, if I throw a number.
Go ahead.
All right. I'll throw a number at you. It'd be a hard one. 74.
Oh, man, that would be 74 is an offensive tackle. For me, it would be a Viking. I can't remember if he's 72 or 74. Is that Ron Yeary? Maybe he was 72. I can't remember, but that's probably not the guy.
He was 73. Like to me, it was like Bob,
right in the middle.
Bob Lilly, another guy that I never.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Saw play. But yeah.
Well, how about the number 99?
Gretzky.
No, George Mikan.
Was Gretzky 99?
Yeah. They're both 99. But
so yeah, George Mikan. I wouldn't even have known he was 99.
George Mikan was 99 long before Wayne Gretzky.
Oh well, sure, obviously.
Yeah, but
did you like seeing him play?
Wow. No, but I did write a book about it. I did write a book about him. So George Mikan's autobiography, if you want to read it. 97, Mark. You're good, Minnesotan.
If I'm going solely by it's got to be the first person that pops into your head. Everson Griffin. Now,
ooh, that's pretty good.
There's greater 97s, but I it's got to be the first person that pops into your head.
That's good. I didn't even think of Everson, but for me right now, it's Kirill Kaprizov playing over in St. Paul for the And so, Connor McDavid plays for Edmonton. They both played against each other last night. They're both 97s.
What about so number 10 for me would be
Fran Tarkenton.
Fran Tarkenton, even though I grew up in Cleveland, it's
what it. Good. Good for you. That's interesting.
He's number 10. Yeah.
I had that one written down as one to say. And you,
you know who number eight is?
Well, there's certainly Kirk Cousins, but there's, unfortunately, that's who popped in my mind. There's other great eights and someone from Cleveland, I'm sure. Who is it?
Well, it's not even a great player. It's like when I thought of this, Greg Coleman was number eight as a punter in Cleveland. Wow. I don't know what he was here, but
yeah, he was eight here as well.
All right, before. So Greg Coleman entered the Greg Coleman was mentioned alongside Wayne Gretzky, George Mikan, Brett Favre,
and number 23. Who's that?
Michael Jordan.
Very good. Yeah, I thought that might resonate. And did you say something of the number three you were saying when you're talking? Who's the most famous number three?
Dale Earnhardt.
That's pretty good response. Not who I was going for, though. He doesn't wear the – well, I guess maybe he does, but his car is number three. George Herman Ruth.
Oh, yeah.
The Bronx Bomber.
Did you like watching him play?
God damn. Oops. I guess we can swear on this thing. All right. Enough of that. I got a couple more quick bonus questions for you. I have to do this real quickly, but what'd you think of, speaking of old, what'd you think of Tiger at the Masters?
Yeah, to me, it was amazing. I've seen some, I think everyone kind of agrees it's amazing, but you're starting to see, well, 278's the worst rounds he's ever played at the Masters. And, for me, it wasn't long ago we were talking about would he ever play again? First of all, it was like he survived, he lived, and then he kept his leg.
Yeah.
Will he ever play again? And then 14 months later, he's playing the first round of the Masters. He's shooting a 71. He's four shots off the lead. The second round, he makes the cut on those really windy conditions. And, guys like DeChambeau are shooting 80 and, leaving because they're not programmed to, think on the golf course other than what the book tells him to say.
Yeah.
Watching masters.com, I kind of followed Tiger until he was done. And then I'd watch the telecast and those 78s it's not like he was spraying it all over the place. He was hitting the ball really well. He just got tired and he couldn't putt and his putting when it went away. So suddenly it was like he four putted on Sunday on the fifth hole. Which can happen in front of the green like he did. And then some three putts where it was just like, the score kind of ballooned on him. But, to me, it was just an amazing performance based on where he was and what we were talking about just a year ago.
Watching him limp, literally limp up.
Yeah.
Does that remind you of anybody you play golf with at all? The bad back and the bulky leg or knee. No, doesn't.
Yeah, he didn't have to have someone. He didn't have to have somebody pull his knee out at Baker National. And
yeah,
that was pretty.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, Mark. Thank you. One last question: if you call yourself a Minnesotan, you probably didn't see the Timberwolves playing game last night and the glue lady who made the scene on the court. Pretty crazy stuff down there at Target Center.
I heard about it, but past my bedtime, Joe. I watched the Cavs. I watched Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, how those guys – I know that they missed some of the season, but to watch those guys in a play-in game, I'm like, jeez. Yeah. I mean, Kyrie Irving was fantastic. But, yeah, I heard that someone – how'd they get it off? It just –
yeah, well, some gal came down,
hard.
Glued herself to the court, glued her hand to the court at Target Center in protest of avian flu, or else the dying or the killing of like a million chickens in one of Glenn Taylor's chicken ranches. Reportedly that's what she was doing. And
What are we supposed to do to the chickens?
I'm not sure. Maybe it
Isn't
wasn't.
that maybe I'll get now I'll get in trouble. Yeah. Aren't chickens there to eat?
Yes, they're eventually. They should probably didn't like that either. But the
Are we,
funny part,
yeah, are,
the Timberwolves were flagging a little bit at this time, and all of a sudden, this lady's gluing her hand to the court. I mean, what? Maybe she can't. She couldn't chain herself to the podium, or she couldn't hang from the rafters like they did at Target Center. So she decided to put some super glue on the court. I felt like she must have been sniffing it before she got there. But hey, that's fine. Now it's going to get me in trouble. But that turned the game around. All of a sudden, the Timberwolves came storming back and they won. And then they apparently, according to Charles Barkley and the rest of the national media, over-celebrated the win of a play-in game. They didn't, it wasn't a playoff game technically, but they got into the playoffs. And Patrick Beverley, who was spurned by the Clippers, the team the Viking or the Timberwolves beat, threw his jersey into the crowd and stood up on the players' table and was all, was in tears. And they were just saying, "Settle down, well, Mark. Do they know us here in Minnesota? Do they know what it's like to be so bereft of even playoffs, or a championship or whatever?"
I don't know, Joe. I think I'm on their side.
Oh my God, of course you are.
That seems a little extreme for a play-in game, but I want to know how they got how they get her hand off the court.
I don't know. They kind of just yanked it off. But that, I mean, I saw a picture on Twitter today that there's a print still there. The residual glue is still there, and I think they're going to leave it. I said, they should leave it in for the playoff run. Never how they got to have that glue to stick together as a team. It was strange. It was just a nutty game. There's crazy stuff happened, and then this happened. So it was wonderful. Target Center was rocking, and we should have been there. And you know what? It's all about the joy of the ride. Enjoy the ride. I mean, you do, if you can't celebrate that and have fun with it, I mean, you can't act like you've been there before when you haven't. Can
Yeah,
you?
true.
Okay. All right. Well, then on that note, we'll close it down until next time. We'll act like we're next time we're here, like we've been here before. And actually we were, because we were here this week and we will be next week. We'll come back and talk a little bit, even a little bit more about the draft that's right around the corner. And what else is next, and who's gonna, what number Mark's gonna change to for the next time we play golf together. So that sound good, Mark? You'll be back.
Sounds good.
All right. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Mike, behind the scenes. Thank you, Joe Johnson, for putting us here. And to all you out there, skull.